Panning Kieran, if he would mind repeating what he just said at the end of the session there, so that, as you know, he was giving a kind of a time frame and that sort of thing, so he'll be able to say that, and anything else, of course, he wishes. We'll follow our pattern with questions around two things. One, time is of the essence for all of us, so if you could keep it to one question. And in terms of follow-up, let me be harsh and say, please ask one question directly and let's deal with it, and we won't have any kind of follow-up, that sort of thing. Okay?
The chair, I don't know whether you all got it, the chair asked me what the process was from now on, and as I understand it, there are two things we've been asked to do. One is the Archbishop of Canterbury in consultation myself, which is the usual formula for these sort of things, is asked to set up a small working group to consult with the provinces. And then the other one is for that body to report to the Joint Standing Committee. The Joint Standing Committee in recent years has been moving towards meeting twice a year. It was one of the recommendations, I think, in the Windsor report. It meets once a year normally, but in the last few years it has been meeting twice a year. So I think it will be sensible in the light of all of this that the Joint Standing Committee would meet before the end of the year. I think that's what I said. Okay. Is that okay?
Okay. Mary Frances Schomburg, Episcopal News Service. I need some clarification, please. In section E of the resolution that's passed, one version of the text said, asks the Secretary General to send the Ridley...
Revised Ridley, yeah.
Okay, well, that's my question is, I don't have the word revised in here. I'm wondering, what's the time frame for sending this out? The covenant's not going out now, correct?
No, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, the word revised does appear in the amended text.
Okay.
According to my records, yeah.
Let me read section E, and I believe I have right. Ask the Secretary General to send the revised Ridley-Cambridge text. To the members for consideration decision on acceptance or adoptions by them as the Anglican Communion Covenant.
So the clause at this time has been taken out.
Which clause? Sorry.
No, that's it.
Ask the Secretary General to send the revised Cambridge text at that time.
At that time.
At that time is the word. This was changed to that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Tess? Okay. George?
Canning here on George Conger, Church of England newspaper. There appears to be some hard feelings downstairs about what has been described to me as a bit of a legerdemain sleight of hand here. A resolution, and we heard a voice by Archbishop Munir Anis. Resolution A was defeated. Resolutions C and D from Philip Aspinall C, which were of the same substance and almost identical in language, were preserved by having them put forward as amendment, even though A was still in consideration. Mrs. Trask of South Africa then asked to put in C and D. John Patterson said no, because it's already been turned down. Rowan Williams got up and said, well, people believe they were voting for this against A in anticipation of voting in C, and because of that, it was allowed back in. I'm wondering how the Archbishop of Canterbury was able to read the people's minds and overturn a vote that was already taken, because this really doesn't seem to follow any logical rules of order. And then we have the amendment to insert them. Procedural amendment to insert the two resolutions, but we never had the substantive amendment to approve the two resolutions. So I explain to me what's going on and why this has not been, why these poor non-English language, first language speakers haven't been trained.
Thank you.
Because that's what I've been told by members of the delegation downstairs.
Okay. As I understand it, what happened was we had from the resolutions committee, well, it's a fact, A and B. A attracted quite a substantial amount of debate, which got more and more complicated. I think Archbishop Aspinall produced a revised version of text B, of the B resolution, which was called, and because it was a substantial revision, it was called text C, which attempted to incorporate the substance of A into B and then produce a new text, C. Okay. That had already been discussed and sort of foreshadowed within the meeting. I think the point the Archbishop made was that people then, knowing that that proposal had been foreshadowed, voted on A and voted to discard it, because they knew that the revised text C was coming. And on that basis, the chair made the ruling about C being acceptable. Now, you
how
may...
How did he know that is the question. How did he know that?
How did who know?
How did he know that people voted the way they did? Did he poll
no.
them? Did he...
The question of, no, the question, no, the question of whether he knew how they voted is not the issue. The issue is, at the time they voted on A, they had already been, or C had already been foreshadowed, so it was, had already been told to the body that C was in the wings. In order to be faithful to the council, then, you should still bring C, because they had been told it was coming, and then after that they took actions, which may or may not have been influenced by that fact. I accept your point there. But given that they may or may not have been influenced by the fact that they knew C was coming, it was then appropriate that C would come.
David?
Well, I'm more confused than ever, and I've been coming to these things for years. How do you honestly expect Global South people listening to all this kind of 18 votes, 18 resolutions for 5 resolutions to really take the Anglican Communion seriously when it's very clear to me and perhaps to others, that it's all designed to keep people at the table based on any kind of prevarication, as long as everybody stays together. It doesn't really matter what you do. Pass a resolution, don't pass it, change the language, fudge the language. Anybody looking at this sees an incredible dishonesty going on here. A game of language and words that means absolutely nothing to most people.
I think most of your confusion arises, David, from the fact that you weren't present in the various discernment groups when all of these issues were actually thrashed out in great detail. And that was the purpose of these, that they actually went through them in very great detail, so that when they came to the plenary, most of the issues had been aired by the groups and by a fairly intensive process, where I think a lot of time had been spent actually discussing the issues, and then you come together for a plenary to express the discussions you've had in the vote.
Then why and the you text, say it was illegal?
And the text that... that was produced by the resolutions committee came from within the discernment groups.
Yes, but the C...
I'm sorry, George.
No,
sorry,
but you're stating them untrue.
George,
C did
sorry.
Not come from the resolution committee.
George, I'm sorry, Robert.
No, he was talking about the 18 resolutions, and they did come from the 18 resolutions.
Even right now, Andrew Huron, I'm sensing a haste in this press conference. I'm sensing there was a haste in the meeting room. There was lots of confusion. I think that's a fair assessment. At the end of it, the Archbishop of Canterbury, you yourself, Paul Feeley, your legal advisor sat for 45 minutes and discussed. I'm sure you were discussing that. If you had to talk that long to figure out what happened, it seems like there's some confusion. My question is this. Gregory Cameron comes in here and says that we need to make decisions that stick. You, Archbishop Dressel Gomez, said that the communion is close to breaking up. Archbishop Williams said that the communion is in chaos and division, and that we are very close to breaking up, and that we need to do something. We're in an emergency.
I can understand why you're... Sorry, you finished. Okay.
Right. How is it that with the amount of confusion and the amount of haste that seems to be taken right now, why can't there be any kind of clarification for the delegates? If it's such an important matter, if we're at the brink of schism, as the Archbishop of Archbishop Canterbury has said almost, why can't there be further discussion at this conference?
The reason for the haste about organizing this press conference was trying to be faithful to you all, as we've tried to be throughout in informing you. So rather than leave it till 11:15, whatever time you normally meet tomorrow, sorry, 2 o'clock, rather than leave it till then, we thought we would do you a favor and I would try and answer some of the questions. So I don't think you can criticize us for the haste if, in fact, it was attempting to respond to your own needs. But maybe you didn't want a press conference and then you don't have to turn.
I just think the people here want you to be faithful to the communion before you're faithful to the press.
So the faithfulness of the... Oh, sorry.
I think people here want you to be faithful to the communion before you're faithful to the press.
The issue with the communion was that what I sensed was people were, within the debate, were very, very positive about the covenant. Very little criticism of the notion of a covenant, and even the vote on affirming that a covenant would... recognize that the Anglican Communion Covenant would provide an effective means to strengthen and promote our common life as a communion. That was affirmed very strongly within the votes. Where I think they wanted, with section 4, was they wanted the same process that had happened with the first three sections, which was a substantial consultation with the provinces, to happen with section 4. And that's actually, if you like, that is being faithful to the communion. Now, I think other people were urging us to sort of keep the timetable close as much as we could, and I think it was very fair that even though the text of the Section 4 was only finalized at the very end of March, beginning of April, that we still brought it to the ACC. But I think what I interpret what's happened here is that they want us to be faithful to the process that enabled us to get Section 1 to 3 to get so much support, that in fact they wanted the same thing to happen to Section 4, and that's what's going to be proposed, because they've asked us to consult with the provinces, which is what happened to all the other sections. So I think actually we've been faithful to the communion in that, but I also think we were faithful to those who wanted to see the thing come before us and to go to the ACC. Except it was quite a short time scale, but that was what people suggested to us, and that was what the design group suggested to us as well, and that was what they did at their meeting in March. 31st of March was it finished.
Colin Coward, changing attitude. I'm trying to think of a nice question to ask. I wasn't confused, as some of the people around this table seem to have been confused, by the point that we got to when Rowan intervened. That's such a question. I just want to contribute my experience.
Thank you. Chris?
Chris Sutton, Evangelicals Now. I just wonder if it's important to get absolutely clear on the table, in a sense, who said what and how many. I think some were saying, I've got a question, some were saying that the process needs to be repeated with Section 4 as of the others, but others were saying no, that Section 4 is itself a response to Lambeth and to many of the procedures in the community. So that's certainly not the view of the whole meeting.
Oh no, I wasn't suggesting.
There was a clear split on the issue of the final vote on those disputed clauses that were put in about 34-31. There was a clear split, the same split, on whether there would be a fourth moratorium, as it were, or litigation, 34-31 again. We have now a de facto delay of at least 9 months before this text goes to the provinces, and instead of there being a discussion with the provinces, as you indicated, like sections 1 to 3, it's going to be a working group that's appointed to do that. And then, of course, what the decision today has managed to do is the general convention can take place without any reference to any formal text of the communion being adopted. Of the covenant being adopted by anybody. I mean, those are the facts. So we now have a situation of indiscipline in the communion. There is nothing that can be appealed to. Further delay. Doesn't this meeting represent a major failure of what the Archbishop of Canterbury said at the beginning he wanted to achieve?
Well, first of all, on the question of general convention happening without the text, I'm aware, and I'm sure you're aware, that the presiding bishop quite some time ago announced that they would not be considering any text, even if it came out of this meeting. So I don't think it alters that fact, and I mean, that's only one province anyhow, but it doesn't alter the fact, substantially the timescale, because they weren't going to continue to consider it anyhow. So
well, whether she wanted it was not the issue. The question is, the communion would have wanted it, and that's a substantive fact.
But I can't, and the communion can't tell them when to consider the covenant. Okay, that's true generally. I think the question of a working group, what I think they've asked is, they've asked for a working group. We didn't propose that, but they asked for a working group to ensure that the provinces are consulted, and they will be consulted pretty as quickly as we can. That could take a long or a very short process. I think it's not unreasonable to say by the end of the year we will try and see the end of that process. It is obviously open to that working group to say we need more time or something like that, but I would rather they did not do it. But I can't, again, control what the working group decides. So I think there's a mixture between haste and trying to get the thing done as quickly and as efficiently as possible, but also trying to be as faithful as possible to the communion. With respect to the divisions of votes, and again, someone else said you can't anticipate what was in the minds of people when they vote and so on. I think most people were in favour of the covenant. Let's start with that. And all the votes on the covenant in general were very strongly in favour of it, very, very strong, very few against the covenant. What I think the difference was those who felt that the text before us, sections 1-4, should go out to the provinces now, and those who felt that in producing section 4 as recently as the end of March and not having a full consultation process with that particular section with all the provinces, that in fact they wanted more time on that. And I think the proposal that was made is actually a sort of a reasonable compromise. It takes a little longer, but I don't think it takes a huge amount longer. I suppose we could have seen, if people were really trying to delay the thing, they would have said and bring it back to ACC 15 or something like that. In fact, they've done the opposite. In other sections, they've said the timescale, they want to report by ACC 15, when I think the original draft said ACC 16. So I think that's an improvement in that sense. So I think it's a trying to compromise between the express wishes of both sides. A, those who wanted to get the covenant out now, and I think that includes a lot of the covenant design group, and those who felt a proper procedure still had to be followed, and the consultation with the provinces will have to take place. And we'll try and do that as quickly as possible.
Kevin Carlson, Anglican TV. You just answered in your first sentence to him that you said you can't force a covenant onto the communion. Is that what
No,
you
I
said?
Didn't say that. Okay. I can't, no. I don't. I said the communion can't force any one particular province to consider it on a particular timescale. That was the worst of what I was trying to say. Is that okay? Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I just want to clarify that.
It's not for me to speak on behalf of the Episcopal Church, but I think what they were signaling, and I think, did it come out of an executive council meeting or House of Bishops? I'm not sure. I'm not sure of the provenance of that particular statement by the presiding bishop. But I think that too was faithful to saying that there should be a proper consultation process about the covenant. And I think the time between now and General Convention is comparatively short, anyhow, isn't it? July or something like that. Yeah. So I would have, it doesn't surprise me, that that would be the case. Sorry.
Have
you done?
Yeah. Are you done?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Okay. Is there time for any more, or do you need
I'm okay, no.
Okay.
Pass for right now.
Tess? George?
There will be some, how do you respond to those who say that Archbishop Drexel Gomez is fond of saying the Windsor Report was created as a matter of urgency. And since I've been going to these things, this is my fourth or fifth one of ACCs, there's been an urgency that things need to be done. Now, this specific issue has arisen in recent times. How do you respond to those who say that this is just another kick the can down the road, just another delay?
I think most people would say that the covenant process has actually been quite a speedy one. We've been through three texts very, very quickly, and I think the fact that certainly sections 1-3 have received widespread affirmation within the communion, I think is a sign that we were getting it right. But I think it's been actually quite a fast process. My date memory is that we started this in 2005, about summertime, I think I chaired the first session on that, which was a preliminary meeting to how a covenant might be developed. And that came fairly quickly after the Dromontane Primates meeting at the early 2005. and the publication of the Windsor Report late 2004. So the first time the Windsor Report was considered was at the beginning of 2005 by the Primates meeting. It was then considered by the ACC at Nottingham in 2005, mid-2005. By September, we had a working group set up to plan how a covenant might be done. The Joint Standing Committee in its February or March meeting of 2006 approved and set up the mandate for a covenant design group. And I think to be here 3 years later is actually quite fast, given they've been through quite a number of texts, and a text that has actually been largely very successful. What we have here is that people want to see the process with Section 4 that worked on the other sections duplicated in this particular case. And I think I can see that argument. Other people would have wanted the thing to go out now. But I don't think either of them are being unfaithful to the communion, and certainly I don't think we could be accused of being late and slow about it.
David? Just so I understand, the covenant as it now stands has failed. It's going into a 3
no.
plus 1.
No, it hasn't failed. No, that's not an answer. That's
all
right.
And so what did the Ridley number 3 draft?
No, the Ridley draft is the number 3.
Right, and that has gone where at this point?
No, it's going to it is sections 1 to 3 will section 4 is going to a working group who will look again at that text in the light of consultation with the provinces. And the working group will oversee that whole process.
That 1 through 3 passed, is that?
No,
it didn't.
I think what the only request, though, is Section 4 be looked at again in consultation with the provinces, because that's the only section that has been through the consultation process. Then I think the revised Ridley text will be presumably commended to the provinces by the Joint Standing Committee. I assume that, and I think that'll happen. I would be proposing to the chair that happens before the end of the year.
So just for future clarity, sections 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
they're not going on to the provinces right now.
No, that's not what the man. Yes, that's correct. That's what the resolution says.
But
section 4 is to go to consultation to the provinces. See, section 1 to 3 has been to the provinces. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, sections 1, 2, and 3, they're going nowhere. 4 is going to a working group that sends them to the provinces. The provinces will then take that, think about it, discuss it, do whatever they want, and send it back to the working group, and then the working group goes to the JSC, and then the JSC goes to...
I actually think you're getting it quite complicated. I think the consultation with the provinces will begin pretty soon, and the working party will be set up to oversee that process. I'm not sure that it necessarily means the working group has got to be in place before the consultation takes place. That's something that the Archbishop and I have got to decide. We've been asked to do both. I don't think we've been asked to sequence them. So we'll try and make a judgment as to what is the best way to do that.
So who does the working group report to?
It goes, then it brings a text to the Joint Standing Committee, which will meet late in the year.
And the Joint Standing Committee reports to the ACC?
No. Then it goes to the provinces. I think the text says that.
There's a new JSC election, isn't
there? Yes. Yeah, you see, ask the Joint Secretary General to send the revised, in the light of that consultation, but the revised Ridley Cambridge draft at that time to members of the Church of Anglican Communion.
Okay, I hope you can sympathize with why I, who deal with this on a regular basis, am confused, and I spoke with delegates downstairs who are confused. I just want to make sure that we know what's happening.
Yeah. It's going to consultation with the provinces. A working group is being set up to oversee that process. That working group will report to the Joint Standing Committee by the end of the year.
That's definite?
I'm proposing it to the chairman. I can't decide when dates happen, but I will be talking to the new chair. You remember the new chairman? Well, it's usually done in consultation between the secretary and chair. It would be normal for most meetings. But I would be proposing to him, and I think it's likely he would accept that that meeting would take place before the end of the year, or certainly very early into 2010.
Okay.
There may be date questions, but that's about all. I think it would be very quickly.
Chris, to you.
I imagine you'll be having a review of this meeting in the light of its processes, the developed Indaba process and the use of the discernment groups and everything that use the motions. In your reflection, what do you think might have been done differently to avoid the sort of confusions that were there this morning? Because you have a resolution that comes that the chair of the resolution committee is not aware of onto the floor. You have the feeling that you have statements being made about we've got to be very careful that we don't over focus on Western procedures, which are not the way everybody handles things, and many people for whom English is not their first language. But in the end of the day, people get tied up in, was the amendment accepted, and therefore it was on the table, and what do they think they were voting about, etc. In fact, almost the very worst of, synodical proceduralism, got hold of the occasion. What would you prefer to see? Why wasn't what was in Resolution C, in a sense, processed through the discernment groups into those resolutions beforehand, so that what came to the House was something that had taken those issues, you said it was sort of fully debated in the discernment group, into account? Were people taken by surprise by what came up on the floor?
Well, no, I think what happened, to be accurate, was the resolutions came up with Section A and Section B, was trying to respond to the atmosphere within the discernment groups, as fed through the people who are from the discernment groups into it, saying that the big issue is the question of Section 4 and what would happen Section 4. So what they did was they put a Section A and said, let's have a substantial debate on the Section 4 and what happens it. And then having done that, then we look at the processes of how the covenant is dealt with. And that was accurate, a reasonable reflection on how they were getting the feedback from the discernment group. What happened, I think, then, was when it came to debate, it was a substantial debate on Section A, and it did get very, very complicated. We were going backwards and forwards. I think then Archbishop Aspinall proposed that actually you might deal with that better by having an amendment taking the substance of A and amending B, which is what C was. It was an amended version of B. I think he did that in order to help, and I think most people felt that was actually a helpful way of clarifying the issue. I think then the Archbishop, then I think there was some confusion on the floor, I think, at that point, and people were not quite understanding exactly what was going on. So the Archbishop proposed that actually we deal, given that we've had foresight of the proposal that Archbishop Aspinall was making, since we had foresight of that, then it would be appropriate to deal with A in the light of that. So I think that's what happened. I think it was actually intended to clarify it. It was always going to be a difficult issue when people were sort of really raising. I think what people were trying to say, and of course I accept that it's hard to predict what people are really saying, but I think they were saying positive things about sections 1, 2, and 3, and there were several moods within the floor on section 4. Some people may not have liked section 4, and some may have felt that the procedure wasn't right about Section 4. One way or the other, I think, A, the Resolutions Committee tried to reflect that. When it got a bit complicated, Archbishop Aspinall tried to clarify it. And then the Archbishop really said, no, let's get this clear. We've been asked, Section A is on the floor. We know Section C is coming, so let's vote on Section A. And then C sort of comes up, then you get B, and then you have the amendment. I think, given that it was always going to be a complicated issue to deal with, I don't think it was that confusing, though I agree it got complicated certain times. But I think it attempted to clarify the confusion, and there was no attempt.
Kevin, I want to go to you. We need to go for a last question here. I know there's others, but Kenneth needs to get back downstairs. So, Kevin, to you. Kevin.
That's right. Kevin, Anglican TV again. All right. You said there was confusion. The Archbishop spoke, there's more confusion.
No, I think he helped to clarify it.
Okay.
I don't think he added the confusion, but it did get confused.
When you adjourned, three bishops came up to me and said, what happened? Because I was reporting it. And I said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They didn't know. I went to the press table and asked them. They didn't know. And if there was no confusion, how come nobody knew except for the people at the gavel stand?
I can't speak for the press. I'm sure you wouldn't want to either.
Yeah.
And, it was complicated. I don't deny that. But I think it was trying, they were trying to clarify it, and it was a very complicated issue we were trying to deal with. So it was. But I do think if you look at the list of things, and they were before people, they're on the screens all the time, people voted, and on most issues they voted very clearly, which shows they were making up their own minds.
Yeah.
And I think, for example, I mean, if people are confused, they abstain. There were very, very, very few abstentions. I mean, maybe one or two, I think, probably two at the most, weren't there?
Yeah, my question was just, you know, people, why would, you know, if they don't understand what happened, then there's confusion.
Well, you do, and then do you ask the press?
I know. How sad is it? Do you have to ask
us? Colin, I'm sorry. I'm going to need to say no to your question because Kenneth does need to get back downstairs. But thank you, as always, for helping to clarify.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay.